Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our interview with Roger Horton. He was CEO at Taylor & Francis and currently is on the board of Cabbie and BMJ. So the first thing really to do is ask Roger to introduce himself and perhaps give us an outline of your career.
Certainly. Thank you. It's good to be invited and good to be here. After many years in the academic publishing area, mostly in sales, editorial, so on, I moved up into senior management and was able to do that as I joined Taylor & Francis from McGraw-Hill. At that time, we then floated the business. The business went from being basically dusty little backroom, fuddy-duddy, fausty techno publisher. We went to being a mainstream FTSE company, then merged that with Informa around the turn of the century, just afterwards. We soon became a leading force in that. I was still able to be the chief executive of that business based in Oxford at the time, or around Oxford, and retired 3.5 years ago from that, from corporate life, and at the same time stepped up to be chair of Cabbie, which is a development agency which has a publishing piece, and also most recently, although I've not yet met my colleagues because it happened during lockdown, right. So I've been chair of the BMJ and a member of the BMA board as well. Interesting times have been on that.
So I'm familiar with both of them because I was an account manager for BMJ for a long time. So it's interesting to hear that it's quite a different couple of companies that you're leading at the moment. And it'd be great to hear more about that as we go forward. So the video we're doing today is around imposter syndrome. And that's what we're interviewing Roger about today, because Roger, 3 years ago, I think it was about 3 years, you posted a LinkedIn post to say, as CEO of TAF, and you were there for 20 years, you always felt an imposter. And so we're interested to understand both what you feel an imposter syndrome is and what you experienced in that light. But also, it's very interesting for you to say that actually, although you felt that sense, you continued as CEO there for 20 years. And so performed very well, I'm sure, in the role. And I worked for you for a while, so I know that. So perhaps you could tell us about why you describe yourself as having imposter syndrome.
Well, it is something which has gained a great deal of press over recent years since it was, I think, first invented, if you like, or first recognised and invented. And I'm sure that people have talked about it under some other things in the past. I think it'd be fair to say that mine was a relatively mild case compared to the ones which I have heard of and have read about, but nevertheless, very real. And my feelings really culminate. And the reason I wrote about it on LinkedIn was to give hopefully other people a sense of, wow, if it's okay for him, then it's okay for me to admit to it. But actually, caused by an event, as I left TNF after all that time, when we joined with Informa, the chief executive of Informa is was my boss, Stephen Carter, and I said to him over lunch, about the week before I left, I said, "I'm amazed, Stephen. I've really enjoyed it." I'm amazed that I've been able to carry on this far. And frankly, I was always expecting to get found out. I'm sure there's going to come a time when people are going to go, yeah, he's had a good run for his money. But And Stephen turned to me, who has one of the biggest brains in Europe, right. Said to me, "Do you know what, Roger? We're all the same."
Yeah.
And I said, "No." He said, "Yeah." He said something like 70% of people have some form of it. And in fact, the higher achievers are more likely to fail imposter syndrome than the lower achievers, to be honest. And that is quite interesting, I think. And I can trace mine back to several things. In a moment, maybe I'll get a chance to say why I think you can make it a positive thing. But I can turn it back to way back, even when I was at school. Depends how long you got on this, but... I was always a pretty reasonable goalkeeper when I was a kid, right. At school, in the school team and stuff. And then I went to senior school. Everyone else grew really quickly and I didn't. If you know anything about playing football and you're a goalkeeper, you really are meant to go and catch the crosses. Well, I couldn't get up there. So I used to, from there on in, I've never been good at crosses, but I was good at everything else. And it was kind of, that's how I felt. The other team always seemed bigger. And I think that's the feeling you kind of go into when you've got imposter syndrome or some form of it. You just feel that everyone else looks fuller and bigger. And so when I was in, when I joined into publishing, I really enjoyed it, and I'm not saying I wasn't good at it, because I was quite good at it, I guess, otherwise I wouldn't have carried on to do what I did. But the thing was that I soon realised that in academic publishing, I was pretty much the only one in the building who didn't have a degree, because I was going to university. And so ultimately I found myself in managing departments and parts of the business where, you know, maybe 10, 20, then 50, then maybe 100 people who all had degrees and were much cleverer than I was. And I was just basically the one that went to that Canadian university, you know, the too thick for university. And so I just carried on thinking, crumbs, they're going to catch me out. They're much cleverer than me. To the point when I was running the business with thousands of people.
But isn't the cliche that as a boss leader, that you hire people who are better than you? And that's part of your job, really.
Yeah, absolutely. But not because they were necessarily clever, but because they were better. Yeah. And I think that, you know, we all therefore have an appreciation of ourselves, but in comparison, we feel there's a danger that we would get found out. And so every time I got promoted, you know, you've heard of the Peter principle, which is the old version, is you get to the point of where you're actually no longer good at what you do. A lot of salespeople, for instance, become sales managers, but they're great salespeople, but they're not great sales managers. Well, that's just a reality of life. So I always expected to be found out. So that carried on with me. And in particular, when I became a director at Taylor & Francis, back in the early days, and when I was still in London I just bought Routledge. I remember my then boss, sadly, he's not with us anymore, Tony Selby, said, I don't think we're going to quite make you managing director, because you haven't been to university in years.
Oh, really?
Which was interesting, because Tony hadn't either. That soon changed, and things moved along. But again, that just tends to just to sort of push along in your mind, going, well, they're going to find me out. So really, basically, it's that fear of being found out. It wasn't because, I mean, the classic ones of being having imposter syndrome are a perfectionist, superwoman, superman, natural genius, individualist, or expert. And I don't think I was any of those things. I was just someone that I was maybe in company where they were a bit more elite than I was, and would I be able to keep up? And if I couldn't keep up, would I get found out? The biggest thing to help is to talk about it. The more you hide anything, regardless of whether it's a confidence issue, whether it's a skills issue, whether it's a mental health issue, whether it's a gender or an ethnicity one, the point is that if you just bottle it up and hold it to yourself, the chances are it will become bigger than it is. And I think that's really what's happened with this. And particularly with imposter syndrome in all its forms, and I can only talk to the milder forms of it, the more you can understand that people who you look up to feel the same, I think the more it helps. So I think actually, in a way, it's a shame I didn't say those things when I was still at the business, but it was because of that last conversation I had with Stephen that I realized that it was kind of so prevalent. So I think talking about it makes a big deal. Like all we're doing in lockdown, you get to doing things which you know you should get around to, and one of those things is clear out the cupboards. And I was clearing out the cupboard, and I actually read the book again, which people had written when I left. And some of the things in there were very touching and very lovely, and I actually hadn't read it since the day I left. And one of the things that came through, though, I think, is that if there was anything which I did do right, it was actually try and tried to be myself, and I tried to treat other people as I wanted to be treated. And I think that's something which we can all look to and aspire to. And I know that I used to say to people, look, just try and be yourself, but on a good day, rather than actually trying to, be a super manager, super boss. Try your personal integrity should shine through. And I think that that's That's one of the things. If people feel they can tell you something and it stays with you, or ask you a question and know that they're going to get a considered answer rather than the one that best serves the company, then I think that stands true. So I just realized that actually many of the things is, I think it's Oscar Wilde said something along the lines of, be yourself because everybody else is already taken.
So thank you very much, Roger, for participating.